I'll work with or against anybody to get our people out of prison. If you're a Republican or Democrat, independent, libertarian, Green Party, Smurf, I don't care who you are. If you are going to try to keep our people in prison, I'm going to run over you.
The Message, spotlighting the most important voices of today with Ebro. An open dialogue about their experiences in these times and the music that inspires them.
Welcome back to The Message. I'm your host, Ebro Darden. Look, back in 2021, I got a chance to speak to Emmy Award-winning political analyst, author, activist, somebody I consider a friend, but he's also very divisive in the social media sphere. And this was in the wake of the Derek Chauvin trial, you know, the man that murdered George Floyd. Van and I spoke about the results of the trial, as well as his own work getting black men and women out of prison. This is The Message with Van Jones. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. The Message, a special segment we put together on the Ebro Show here at Apple Music, where we have deeper conversations. We bring on, you know, people who are luminaries in and about the world doing amazing work, whether they're musicians or otherwise. And today, we have a good friend of mine in this media game. He goes by the name of Van Jones. You see him on CNN. You see him trending often for one thing or another. He's passionate. He's been active in risking his life and, you know, putting a lot of energy into saving black men from the prison system going back 25 years. Now we see him on television, and many people think that Van Jones started on CNN, but got news for you. He's been doing this work since college. He's been putting out books. Welcome to The Message, Van Jones. How you doing, sir?
Hey, I'm good. I'm glad to be talking about something besides just the politics, because, you know, when it's your life, everything that you're doing, the food you're eating, the music you're listening to, it's all a part of the struggle. So I love what you're doing.
Nah, and that's actually the reason I wanted to reach out, because, you know, I know because we've had many conversations, but it may not, you know, be well known how involved or how close to music you've been at parts of your professional career.
Yeah, look, you know, this year marks the fifth anniversary of Prince's death. And, you know, the last 6 or 7 years of his life, I got a chance to work with him very closely. We did a lot of charitable, philanthropic stuff. He helped to start Green for All, Yes We Code, Rebuild the Dream, Dream Corps, a lot of the things I'm associated with. When you look at my resume politically, what is not on the resume is that it was Prince's money behind a lot of that stuff, making it go. So that mix of message and movement and music, you know, was a big part of what we were doing. And then even before I knew Prince, back in the 90s, the way that we fought against the prison system that was exploding in California, you got to remember, that was mostly Democrats doing that. So a lot of the black preachers, a lot of the civil rights establishment was ambiguous. And we were the youth, so we had to fight with what we had. And what we had was hip-hop. Right. What we had was spoken word. So we would roll up on city council meetings, school board meetings, police commission meetings deep with the youth. And when it came time for the public comment, we would hit hard on lyrics, young women doing spoken word, often the young brothers, you know, rapping, doing hip hop. People actually started in the Bay Area in the 90s. They would come to our protests so they could get on TV rapping, you know. Right. So we were using, you know, hip hop as a weapon before we had anything else to fight with.
Well, and that was actually, I'm glad you brought that up. That was part of the original intent, going back to the Last Poets, Gil Scott Heron.
Yeah. Gil Scott Heron from Jackson, Tennessee. Also Van Jones from Jackson, Tennessee. Yeah. Just saying. Something in the water. Something in the water. Genius.
Well, Van, while we have you, you know, and the audience tuned in here, you know, Van has put together 25 songs of Van Jones, The Message playlist. I mean, you have everything from Whitney Houston, Snoop Dogg, to DMX, to Michael Jackson, Prince, of course, Janelle Monáe, Bob Marley, Stevie Wonder, Lauryn Hill. I mean, listen, Violent Femmes. We got to get that on, because that's right. You know, the joint. Public Enemies on here two times, Missy Elliott. U2. So we got a nice musical smorgasbord, if you will, from Van Jones today. Yep. But for the audience, what is your message? What's the message? Because there's so much going on. There's so much that you're tied into, both on television and things you're speaking about, but behind the scenes. What's the message?
Yeah, my message is we need to close prison doors and open up doors of opportunity. For you know the young people in our communities. I mean, we spend so much money surveilling them, tracking them, policing them, incarcerating them, jailing them, tailing them when they're on probation and parole, and so little money on scholarships. All the stuff we had were growing up, you know, the youth programs, the community centers that were, you know, full of activities and had budgets and stuff that made sense. And now, you know, we don't have that. And so we really need to... move the money from, you know, tearing our young people down to building our young people up. And I've been fighting for that for 25 years. Ella Baker Center for Human Rights, I helped to start January 1, 1996. That was 25 years ago this year. Helped to build the Dream Corps in Oakland, which is, now a really big organization, colorofchange.org. The Reform Alliance, I work with Jay-Z and Meek Mill and others to build the Reform Alliance the past couple of years. I have been primarily spending my time trying to build organizations that can close prison doors, open doors of opportunity. And I'm sometimes on television as well. Most people know me as a TV guy. That's 2%. The 98% is trying to figure out how to get us free.
Speaking specifically to our incarceration system and our justice system, there's people, I think, have been conditioned culturally to believe that there is a function there that's going to improve society. What has your research and close proximity to our justice system and prison system actually revealed? And the studies show it, too. I mean, there's plenty of books, but...
I mean, look, if you couldn't design a system that could waste more money, have worse outcomes, cause more harm, and miss the target more often than the prison system. I mean, you have an 80% recidivism rate, which means you have an 80% return to prison or rearrest rate. If you had any system that said, we're going to spend this much money... $30,000 to $50,000 per year per person. If it's a young person, $120,000 per year per kid, and 80% of the people that you help are going to fail, you would say that we're done. Like, why are we doing this? And so it's not about rehabilitation or anything like that. It is a punishment industry. It's an incarceration industry. People in the public and private sector making a ton of money locking us up instead of lifting us up. And, you know, it's time for us to move on to a different system. Everything is getting disrupted. Smartphone technology, artificial intelligence, cryptocurrency, everything is being disrupted, except when somebody makes a mistake, if they're black, brown, or poor, you put them in a dungeon, which is a 17th century, you know, invention. And the idea that you could use data, you could use nutrition, you could use meditation, you could use all kind of stuff to help people make better choices. Nah, just if it's black, brown, poor, put them in the dungeon. That's got to change.
So you'd say probably don't believe the hype. The prison system.
To coin a phrase.
Yeah, exactly.
To coin a phrase. Don't believe the hype.
Yeah, let's start right there. This is on the Van Jones message playlist. Classic Public Enemy right there today as we sit with Van Jones. And if you want to get the collection of songs he put together for us on Apple Music, the Van Jones message playlist. Let's talk about Prince. Because he's been vocal about abuse, the government, big business taking advantage of people. I mean, identity. There's everything. So many things on the list that Prince was way ahead of the curve on. He's a genius. Yeah. So there's not, I can only find so many words to salute Prince other than just to say that he's a genius. But I want to turn it over to you because you had close proximity to the brother.
Well, you know, you say he was ahead of the curve. I sometimes say he was 100 years ahead of the curve. I mean, he's just unbelievable. He wanted to get his music directly from his heart to his fans with nobody in the middle, way before a Spotify or Apple Music, like any of those kind of things. His view was I don't want lawyers, management, record labels, anybody. I just want to give my music to folks. So he put his music on the internet in the 1990s, mm-hmm. when people didn't even know what the internet was. Like, that's how ahead of the curve he was. And his love for just regular people, struggling people, black people, was so profound. Most people didn't know that because he's such a private person. He didn't want his all of his charitable stuff known. He gave so much money to Black Lives Matter, to the Harlem Children's Zone, to Yes We Code, all these different things. He gave away most of his money, and he never wanted to have a building and a plaque and that type of stuff. He said, you just do it because it's the right thing to do. But I think his understanding of human freedom, that's the thing I learned from Prince. He wanted to be free. He didn't want to be put in a box when it came to gender, when it came to, you know, he was proud to be black, but he didn't want you to put him in a box about him being black. He's going to be black how he wanted to be black. Mm-hmm. And you know, you think about people like Janelle Monáe, you think about people, everybody knows Sheila E. in that generation, but he was still reaching out to the Alicia Keys, the Janelle Monáes, and building up their careers, believing in women. Damaris Lewis, my goddaughter, who's now a great actress, he reached out to her when she was a kid. Believing in women, putting them in positions, you know, and I think he was the first modern Afrofuturist. I mean, you know, Sign of the Times, I think, is the first Afrofuturist anthem, dealing with the present and projecting forward both good and bad about what could happen.
Rest in peace to the Purple One, Prince. That record, Sign of the Times. I mean, on so many levels, you know, me as a person who's been in around the media, music, you know, industry, that record, the drums, the writing, there's just so many things that it's just amazing. That's one of my favorite top 10 Prince record for me.
Yeah, me too. And it was so far ahead. I mean, he was always leaning forward, and that one was leaning forward, and you know, artistically, lyrically.
But then it was soulful too, again. Like the ad libs.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, dun, 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 hey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funky. Yeah. He was funky.
It's funky. It's all of that. On this Van Jones Message playlist, you also. The great Madonna, since we're talking about greats, you know, no matter how you feel about Madonna, another person who has, you know, created conversation, broke barriers, pushed the envelope, challenged status quo. Even this video, Like a Prayer, controversial when it came out, religious imagery and her being a woman of the Catholic Church and having a black choir and what she was wearing. I mean, you remember the controversy around the music. So, and speaking of something like a Prayer, Madonna, and cancel culture that so many people have tried to use as a springboard for their own agenda while canceling things in the process. This is, you know, Madonna was one of those individuals that the conservatives wanted to cancel. They wanted her gone.
Well, she was a master of, you know, using sexual controversy to both get attention, but also drive the conversation in the right direction. You know, now you look at that stuff and you think, well, this is nothing compared to the kind of stuff you see in music videos today.
Right.
But you have to remember at the time, this was scandalous stuff, unbelievably scandalous stuff. An interracial kiss and all these different things and a black Jesus and holy crap and burning crosses. I mean, people just couldn't handle it. I mean, if the Twitter would have just like melted down.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's like, but and now it's like, oh,
yeah. Exactly.
No big deal.
Boring. Like,
exactly. Where are the Satan shoes? You know, it's
yeah, like, exactly.
It's no big deal. But she cut a path in a way that hadn't been done before in terms of women owning their sexuality. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe a Marilyn Monroe, but you always got the feeling with a Marilyn Monroe that maybe she was, wasn't really in control of it, that she was just, you know, maybe almost a victim of her sexuality as much as anything else. With Madonna, she's like, you know, I'm a boy toy. I mean, she came with it. And what I like about, you know, that song, Like a Prayer, is, you know, the black gospel, presence there, the celebration of it, how edgy it is. You can't think about that song without thinking about the video. And it just reminded me of a time when we were still breaking basic barriers. You got to remember, I was born in 1968. If you put up a picture, a poster on your wall of Madonna, your mom might lose her mind.
That's right.
If you're a white kid, you put up a poster of Michael Jackson, your dad might tear it down.
Right.
I mean, we were fighting literally at the cultural level over gender expression, sexuality, race, and it was the kids versus the parents, and MTV was the enemy. MTV was like this place where what the hell is going on? And your wall, the poster that you put up, was your stand against the old guard trying to keep us back. And so for me, Madonna is such a symbol of that. And now people have kind of forgotten. And said, no, she was in the front line of the kind of gender freedom we enjoy today.
Yeah. When you look at all of the noise and you know, the outrage of what goes on in music today. You brought up Satan's Shoes or Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion with WAP. You're a parent. You know, do you find yourself having to check yourself at things that you guffaw? You're like, you gasp, but then you go, but, you know, it's relative to the time.
I'm a hypocritical parent. I don't care. I'm a hypocritical parent. Our stuff was good. This stuff is terrible. I don't have... I'm hypocritical.
You're creative.
I'm hypocritical.
Nah, you can't,
I'm not a cool
man.
Parent. And you know what's so funny? My sons call me out on this all the time. I'm like, this is unwholesome music, blah, blah. And my older boy's always like, oh, what do you want to listen to? To some Tupac and Eminem? Is that what you want to listen to, Daddy? I'm like,
right.
Yes.
Like,
he goes, well, Dad,
No.
Yeah, so every generation, you know. But it is true. They are pushing past where we stopped.
Right.
And yeah, in some ways,
with respect to identity, with respect to things that are like bully culture and accepting people for whom they are,
you have to give it.
To the current generation, the 18 to 24s right now specifically, what do they call them, Gen Z or Centennial something?
Yeah, Gen Z, yeah.
They are definitely more conscious and aware and sophisticated, empathetic, I think, in ways that society has never seen before.
No, I think that's right. And that in that regard, I think that they beat us hands down. I mean, I was looking at, I went back on Netflix, I was looking at some old Eddie Murphy stuff from the 80s, and I'm like, like you couldn't and shouldn't say any of that stuff today when it comes to, you know, the gay community, et cetera. So, yeah, so I think in that regard, they're a lot better than us. And in some ways, it's just fun for me to argue with the guys about their music. It gives them something to fight against.
To fight for, yeah. That's what we call that over here, domestic trolling.
Just messing with it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just messing with it.
I think, if you like what Meg Thee Stallion is doing, if you like what Cardi B is doing, you got to, you know, a lot of people you can tip your hat to, but one of those people in that lineage would be Madonna. I mean, yes. she's one of those people. Now, obviously, they have they can you know, hat tip to a whole bunch of people going all the way back. But I just think I wanted to throw Madonna in the mix.
We have to get to Whitey on the Moon, Gil Scott-Heron. I mean, you guys are from the same town, but talk about the first times you heard. Because I know the first time I heard Gil Scott-Heron, my father was playing it.
Same.
So, yeah. Tell me what that experience was and what the words mean to you.
Well, see, I think, Gil Scott-Heron, The Last Poets, Muhammad Ali.
Mm.
You know, black men using spoken word as a way to challenge the system, to challenge what was going on, was rare. I mean, now, you know, hip hop, it's normal. You have to remember how unusual it was to hear a male voice, not singing, but just speaking directly.
A black male voice.
A black male voice, just speaking directly. A rat done bit my sister nail, but Whitey's on the moon. I mean, in the context of no hip hop, you know, no rap, this is 10 years before that. Hit hard, man. That's like somebody taking an axe handle and just smacking you in the middle of the eyes.
Mm.
And your dad's like, hey, listen to this. And remember, this is vinyl, okay? So the first thing you hear is your dad drop the needle. And then a rat. You're like, oh, what the heck is this? Yeah. This ain't the OJs. Yes. You know, this ain't gospel.
No.
What is this? And so that really set the palette, I think, for a lot of us for what hip hop became, because you realize there's a different lane and there's a different kind of truth and seriousness you can get to when you're talking about black men doing poetry. Wait, black men doing poetry? That's not even supposed to be a thing. Oh, shit. This is a thing, right? And so, you know, Gil Scott-Heron needs to be, if there's going to be a Mount Rushmore of hip-hop or whatever, before you get to Mount Rushmore, you should pass a big monument to Gil Scott-Heron because he opened the door.
Van is here with us today, giving us his time. I know he's had a busy last several weeks with the Derek Chauvin trial, who was on trial for the murder of George Floyd, and convicted on all three accounts. There were people who were upset about this. There are people who were overjoyed and emotional, crying and singing in the streets. Who feel like this verdict was way overdue. And a complete shift for culture, potentially. Where are you in what this trial meant, this conviction meant?
I think two things. First of all, had we lost, it would have been even more. In other words, if a white police officer can choke a black man to death
on camera,
lynch a black man. That's what that was. When a white man is choking the life out of a black man and the whole community is standing around screaming, that is a lynching. So if a white police officer can lynch a black man in broad daylight and the whole world sees it and the jury goes, that's okay, well, then what can they not do to us? So you really had the humanity of a generation on trial. You had the ability of the system to recognize any kind of black life's value at all. A lot was on the line. The fact that we're not living in a country right now where it's all right for them to lynch us is important. Mm. But the flip side of it is, it took too long. You know, Emmett Till, murdered in the 50s, didn't get justice. I mean,
Rodney King
in the 90s. Didn't get justice. Then you come up through, all the way up to, you know, Breonna Taylor. You have so many
Eric Garner
people.
On camera.
Eric Garner. I mean, Abner Louima. Abner Louima. You know, shot 20 some times with no nothing on him. No justice. No real justice. And so, so too long in coming. And the lesson should not be, well, the system worked this time. No, the system did not work this time. It started out with a cover-up from the police department, with putting out a fake a press release about it, saying it was just a medical incident. It started out with a local racist, corrupt prosecutor filing a worthless complaint. There was no way it was going to be successful in court. And then the people rose up and said, no way. And that forced the hand of the governor, who took the case from the local racist prosecutor and gave it to a black man, Keith Ellison, who is the attorney general, a black Muslim, who then did the right thing. So, the system didn't work. The people made the system work. The people stood out there with their video cameras. The people forced the issue out of that local racist environment. The people elected Keith Ellison. The people elected Joe Biden, who's now investigating the whole department. All that is the people forcing the system to work. So that means going forward, we have to continue to force the system to work. It gives you hope and faith in the power of the people, not hope and faith in the actions of the system. But it's important for us to know, though, and to tell the young people, the marching mattered, the voting mattered, having some of our people in power matters, and your cell phones matter. So yes, your black life does matter, and let's keep fighting to make sure that it matters more and more going forward.
Ready or Not sounds like the song we should play right after that, because whether they ready or not, here we come.
Here we come.
Do you feel like it is this puts wind in the sails of the activists on the front line and the grassroots organization? I mean, look, even the work that you do where you've been able to make inroads in getting people out of jail and changing laws, even working on bipartisan bills, even if social media and the world comes down on you for the work that you've done with the Trump administration or however you got to work with Republican governors. You know, 80% of the black folks in jail, you once told me, are in jail in states run by Republican governors. So it's not as if we can just, as people who disagree with them politically and maybe disagree with them in other ways personally, can just ignore them. Like, we have to engage with them.
Yeah, listen, the reality is I'll work with or against anybody to get our people out of prison. That's the stand I take. I'll work, if you're a Republican or Democrat, independent, libertarian, Green Party, Smurf, I don't care who you are. If you are going to try to keep our people in prison, I'm going to run over you. And if you're willing to do something to get our people out of prison, I'll work with you. I'm a single issue person when it comes to that. For one reason, the people in prison can't vote. If you're in prison, you can't vote. If you're in prison, you can't march. If you're in prison, you can't tweet. You're literally in a tomb. And you can't wait every 4 to 8 years for somebody you like to get in office. And, you know, I will shoot it. You know, I'm sitting here in prison. I have no ability to affect anything, but I have to wait 8 years for the Democrats to win an election before Van Jones is going to help me. Well, that doesn't make any sense. Now, the majority of our folks need to keep doing what they're doing in terms of keeping the pressure on, et cetera. I'm not saying everybody should do what I'm doing, but I'm saying that some of us got to be willing to walk across the street and bring our people back home. And that's my role. I don't apologize for it. Some people like it. Some people don't like it. I'll tell you, the people who never complain, the people who come home.
Right.
The 17,000 people that we got out of federal prison early, none of them complain. The 70,000 people we got out of state and local jails early ahead of COVID, they don't complain. And, you know, somebody said, you know, Van Jones has freed more black people than anybody since Harriet Tubman. I don't know if that's true or false, but I like that.
It sounds good.
It sounds good.
Put it on a T-shirt.
I'll put out a T-shirt, you know, and I think that you have to be willing to be misunderstood and criticized by your own people sometimes, because if you only operate inside of what your friends like, maybe God gave your friends a different mission. Maybe God gave your friends a different assignment. What is the assignment God gave you? Maybe your friends are great at hip-hop, but maybe you're a classical violinist. Mm-hmm. That's your thing. Do your thing. And you'll never hear me criticize anybody else for doing their thing. The people who have a hard line left position, you'll never hear me criticize them because that's important. You need people who just got to hold the line and not take any crap. That's important. But other roles are important, too.
My name is Ebro Darden. You got it on The Message. You can find the Van Jones Message playlist available on Apple Music. Great music taste and a big Prince fan. A lot more thoughtful conversation coming up. Brand new interview with Puerto Rican superstar Residente in just 2 weeks. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on your podcast app and get notified as soon as it drops. Now let's get back to Van Jones and his message. A lot of classics on this Van Jones, The Message playlist. Is there something on here as we, you know, get to the close of our conversation today? Something on here you want to make sure the people hear and why?
Oh, it's just so much.
I know, it's hard, right? It's hard. All right, pick two.
Okay. Oh, my goodness. Like, you're making me pick my against my babies. I got to give Bob Marley some love. So Survival, just because that was my college, that got me political.
Well, y'all know Van Jones used to have locks back in the day. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
the hair
exactly,
was long.
Exactly.
He was listening to Bob Marley.
Hey, listen, man. Yeah, so I'll throw my Bob Marley in there. And then I should do I Love Black, but I'm going to do Me Against the World with Tupac, just to give Pac his love.
Yeah, it is. Heavy Bay Area love, too, that Pac love.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, yeah, in the yeah. 90s, when you was outside, did you and Tupac ever cross paths in activism or, you know, anything like that?
No, because, you know, he was already such a megastar and I was just, you know, coming up. And so, you know, we all loved Tupac. I mean, you know, as you know, in the Bay Area in those days, I mean, you couldn't go anywhere without hearing Pac. I mean, it was Pac. And so I never met him. But he spoke for my generation, especially West Coast. You know, other people could say what they want to about others, but you know, for West Coast, he spoke for us. That, you know, and me against the world. I mean, especially after, you know, Rodney King and they're passing all these ballot measures, you know, three strikes and you're out or whatever. It was just like, they're just coming for young black guys. And I was like a little nerd, you know, out of, you know, law school. I felt as much of a target as anybody else just because it was wholesale lock us up. No mercy. Police everywhere. SWAT teams. You know, this is California in the 90s. And a blue state, Democrats mainly in charge. Democratic governors sending in the cops. No help, no mercy. No, they're taking away scholarships. They took away affirmative action, and they're building all these prisons. And it felt like it was us against the world. And Tupac embodied that. That's that rebel spirit, that defiance. Also, the politics. You know, he's, you know, a son of a Panther. All of that stuff. He was who we really were trying to be like and wanted to be like. And they just, you know, they took him from us too soon.
You know, the black experience in America, really the black experience in the entire diaspora under the post-colonial transatlantic slave trade, white supremacy, that whole dynamic that has plagued really the world for several centuries now. Yeah. You know, when you look at where you are on CNN today, the amount of homes that your face, you know, goes into, the people you impact, the rooms that you move in and out of, but then also the disparity between where you are and where even someone like myself is and what we know is going on the street level. Survival is what a lot of people are doing as the middle class shrinks and we see more and more billionaires than ever before. Where do you see it going? Are we seeing a shift today where you see people putting forth progressive ideas, looking at public safety differently, reprioritizing education and you know, addressing whether or not we've made the changes, but at least starting the conversation around student loans and these predatory loans that, you know, a lot of students are burdened with just trying to better themselves, right? You know, we don't have a society, specifically in America, that is one that is, like you said earlier, lifting people up. It feels like one that wants to burden people and hold them down with all different types of burden, and even psychological burdens, trauma, emotional trauma, the violence that we see, militarized police, right? Our government gives local police departments military equipment to keep its local citizens in check. The same stuff they would use abroad to go to war, they use in our neighborhoods.
I mean, in a major way. I mean, when the George Floyd, Derek Chauvin trial was happening, there were 3,000 troops in Minneapolis, and we had 2,500 troops in Afghanistan. So we have more troops in Minneapolis than the whole military presence in Afghanistan. It lets you know how afraid they were of, you know, of our righteous anger if things had gone a different way. So I don't know. I think there's a tug of war for the future. I think there's some very sinister forces, and not just in politics. Silicon Valley, I think you got people in Silicon Valley, you know, the big tech companies. Some of those guys, look, if they could be on Mars with like sex robots and let the earth burn, they'd be happy to do it. They don't give a damn. And so you've got a lot of, you know, stuff going on. But I think you also have some very positive things happening. And I think that, you know, you mentioned that young generation is coming up, you know, that sees things very clearly. And because they don't have the cushion, you know, when they handed me my student loan, it felt like they were handing me a balloon to get up out of where I was. When they hand these kids a student loan, it's like they're handing them an anvil or a brick, you know, to just, you know, pull them down. And so, but their illusions are being burned every day. And that's a painful process, but it's also, you know, after you burn away the illusions, the truth can have more space. And I think the next generation is coming up. For me, my biggest awakening when college was when somebody handed me an audio cassette survival Bob Marley, because that is his most political, revolutionary album. And it introduced me to revolutionary politics. It introduced me to black politics. Up until then, you know, Michael Jackson, Prince, whatever. It was all kind of subtle. It was in the mix. It was kind of, Bob Marley was coming with it.
Direct.
You know, he was direct. Direct. And yet he put it in a package where, you know, white folks would be dancing to it. I'm like, are you listening to these lyrics? I don't know if you listen to the words.
Yeah.
Bob Marley, I give Bob Marley, I give Public Enemy a lot, and Spike Lee a lot of credit. That was a trinity for me that got me political in the 80s and set me up for, you know, to come into the 90s as a real warrior. So I always want to give Bob Marley his credit.
Van Jones, it's been a pleasure talking to you today. You know, for the audience out there, the Van Jones Message playlist, you know, goes through Tribe Called Quest, Scenario, Busta Rhymes, some Hoves in there, some Snoop Dogs in there, like I said, DMX. But then you got things like this that really provide some, like he said, some direct political, you know, spiritual, cultural vibes. Courtesy of Bob Marley, too. So, Van Jones, it's been a pleasure sitting with you today, man.
Well, hey, listen, thanks for letting me be a part of this. You know, the LL Black song, you know, I did it my way. We didn't play that version, but we played My Way at my father's funeral.
Oh, wow.
You know, and that's the tradition I walk in. Willie Anthony Jones came up out of Orange Mound, Memphis, born in poverty, born in a shotgun shack, or what you would call a shotgun shack if you saw it. You know, joined the military, got out. I went to a little black college, married the college president's daughter, my mother, got all his family out the hood and did good. And when he died, they played, you know, I Did It My Way. And, you know, that's what I plan to do as well. I'm going to go out like that. I'm trying to do everything I'm doing for my community, but I'm doing it my way.
There it is. Thank you for your work. You know, I know they come for you sometimes, but like when I text you, man, listen, they supposed to do that. They supposed to
that's
do
right.
that.
Exactly. I'm not mad. That's
right.
No,
it's all love.
We challenge each other.
That's right.
Yeah, we challenge each other. Yo, iron sharpens iron. We got some sharp folk in our community. I don't mind it. Let's keep fighting for freedom and keep the main fire on the main enemy. That's all.
There it is. Van Jones, thank you, sir.
The message.
Don't push me. Call close to the edge.
An open dialogue about the voices of today and their experiences through music that inspires them.